Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's where you're going to find out what the Sox are doing. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. Oh, it's your Daily Sox Podcast. And here's your host, Josh Lewis.
Thank you, Clyde Lawrence. That is the guy that sings this open and performed this open, part of the band Lawrence, which is great. You can check them out wherever you get your music, but I don't think you'll be disappointed. Josh Lewin is my name. That part is true. And here we are getting ready for the final series before the All-Star break, and we're going to talk nothing about it, as whatever is happening between the Blue Jays and the Red Sox. I don't know, because I'm not there. I'm in Greece. And not the musical. I did not get cast to be in the musical Grease. I'm not John Travolta. I'm certainly not Olivia Newton-John. But I'd like to do that someday. It'll be fun. The point of all this is our continuing series, the last in our continuing series of getting to know the guys on NESN, the big three anyway. Talk to Salty a little bit too. Would love to have Mike Napoli on at some point, some of the other guys. But let's start you with the big three. You've already heard this week from Eck and from Remdog. Now Dave O'Brien, the glue that keeps all that together. Good friend of mine. Very happy to be able to say that. Here's the interview we did together. So the podcast long-form narrative continues this week. The great Dave O'Brien will join us in just a moment. And again, if you haven't been tuned in on this or clued in on this, this is me essentially being lazy and not actually telling you about the games this week, because it would mean getting off the beach in Santorini and actually doing some work, and I'm just not prepared to do that. So this is as close as a mail it in as I can do, which is let's gather up some interviews with cool Red Sox people and run them all week while I'm getting almost comically tan in Greece. So we come to Dave O'Brien. And I've saved maybe the best for last here because, no, seriously, he just chortled, but I didn't mean to get a chortle. Professionally, this is about the best there is in an industry that is very cutthroat, and obviously it's a subjective business. Some people, they may prefer this guy to the other guy, but I don't know anybody that doesn't watch or listen to a Dave O'Brien game and says anything other than that guy's really good. I mean, that guy's informed. Got great pipes. He knows everything about what he's talking about. He's
this has to mean only one thing, Josh.
Dying?
It's two things. Yeah, either I'm dying or the check is cleared. It's one of those two things.
No, I just and it's weird because it's a Red Sox podcast. I don't need to sell people on who you are and what you do, but it's proprietary and customary to give background. So now that we've done that. You look lovely in your Joseph Aboud wear, by the way.
Well, the Joseph Aboud's a big part of our show because, as you found out your first year doing the Red Sox, Joe Aboud is here all the time. I mean, he's always here on Friday, often here on Saturday and Sunday in the stands down the third baseline. He has a great seat. He often brings family, brings his daughter. He'll bring friends. But he is such a big part of our show because he dresses everybody on our show. And, Jerry Remy, Dennis Eckersley, myself, we're never going to look one-tenth this good unless Joe Aboud is putting our ties on and matching up our shirts and our suits.
If Joe's marketing people are listening to this, we have a reach of about 2,200 people per podcast, I'm told. So we've gotten you some nice marketing, and I want a tie.
It's great stuff. Well, you've got a tie coming because usually we get like 10 or 12 ties with every suit.
Oh, nice.
And I pick like four that I really like, and the others I give away. So.
Oh, I will take your sloppy seconds tie-wise for sure.
You got it for sure.
So if you don't mind, Obi, what I wanted to do with our time together, I wanted to kind of walk through, not so much your resume, but I just thought, I'm always interested to talk to guys in the business who have been in different stops and seen different organizations up close. I mean, you've landed at the optimal one. I mean, you're not only a part of Red Sox Nation, you've been here for some really cool stuff. But let's wind it back. Let's do the behind the music thing here with Dave O'Brien. Back to your college days, and I know I don't know if you did baseball at Georgia. I know you did football and basketball, but who would I know from that era? Who were you doing, so to speak?
Well, as a college student, because I'm a Syracuse guy, 2 years in front of me was this young hotshot named Sean McDonough. 1 year behind me was this young hotshot named Mike Tirico. And there were also about six or seven other men and women who've gone on to do tremendous things. But that's sort of the group of guys that I came through Syracuse University. But no, I never did baseball. I never did minor league baseball. Did college basketball and was involved with the football stuff at Georgia.
Now, was that a radio station hire?
WSB Atlanta is my second job. I was only 23 years old, but the guy that I was the sports department with, I was number two, he was number one, was Brad Nessler.
Oh, wow.
And Brad Nessler was the voice of the Atlanta Falcons. You talk about a great football announcer. And that was the sports department at WSB Radio. So I was the young kid who did afternoons, and I did a talk show. He did morning drive. He did the Falcons. Eventually, I started doing Georgia basketball, and then came an opening with the Atlanta Braves when Ernie Johnson Sr., Ernie Johnson's dad, retired.
Wow.
And he had been on the air for about a quarter century. He decided he was done. Stan Kasten was running the Braves at the time, and he liked my basketball work when he heard me doing Georgia hoops because he was also running the Atlanta Hawks. So he was a big basketball guy. He was like, hey, he called over to WSB and said, if O'Brien has a tape on baseball, can you have him send it over? We'd like to listen to it, which is exactly what happened. I went into the stands for Braves games in like 1988, 89. I called games into a tape recorder from the stands with about nine of my closest friends because no one went to the Braves.
I was going to say, you picked a perfect place to set up and do that.
They were terrible. And so based on that, I landed my first baseball job in Atlanta doing the Braves. 1990, they hired me. The team was terrible. In 91, they went to the World Series. Total turnaround, phenomenal turnaround. That's how my baseball career got going.
So you now have some Marlins and Mets that will step up after that. Let's walk through that. When I say to you, hey, tell me about your Marlins experience. I mean, who are some of the names, the people either in the booth or on the field or in the clubhouse that will always kind of be in your cranium here?
Well, I worked with a guy named Joe Angel who has retired. He was a longtime voice of the Baltimore Orioles. And Joe and I formed a radio team, first radio team down in South Florida. And that was fascinating to be with an expansion club on the ground floor of everything, where everything is a first. You know, your spring training, first spring training hit was a big deal.
Right.
You know, that was Brett Barbary, you know, a double at Cocoa Beach, Florida, you know, which is not even a ballpark there anymore. We thought the ballpark was going to fall down. It had been there for so long, it would sway in a hard wind. And
wow.
And we had a great, great time, Joe and I, together as the radio team. After a few years, they put me on television with Tommy Hutton, who is a phenomenal announcer. He's been still in Florida. He did ESPN for years. We formed a great bond as well. But it was off of that experience that ESPN kind of scouted me and offered me a deal to start doing games on ESPN. So, you know, you get on TV for a few innings. And I remember one of the first things they looked at ESPN was a tape of a game I did right here at Fenway Park.
No kidding.
1997, I want to say, was the year. The Marlins were great. They won the World Series that year. And we came to Boston in an interleague series. And a lot of the guys at ESPN, especially back then, were huge Red Sox fans. They remain huge Red Sox fans. So they got a kick out of seeing me talk about having been raised in Quincy and Marshfield and growing up in New England and coming to Fenway Park as a young kid. And they thought that was great that I had all that information and that background, along with you know, calling the ball game between the Marlins and the Red Sox, and so that's why they, one of the big reasons they made me the offer they did.
Wow, that part I did not know. So, but to work for a team, obviously, very different dynamic than working for a network. And when you had the opportunity, I know it wasn't a lot of games, it wasn't every day with the Mets, although I know they offered you the chance to do that. But how was that a part of your life? How did it start? How did it end?
Well, the Mets, that was fascinating because I was doing the Marlins every day and then went to ESPN exclusively, left doing a team every day. But I yearned to be part of a ball club. So when the Mets came calling and said, look, we have a 50-game package, just weekends, you know, PIX, you know, PIX, Channel 11 in New York. All New Yorkers know that. And that was the Mets over the air station. And my partner was going to be Tom Seaver. And it was just 50 games. It was just weekends. But I had a blast doing it. I think everybody should live in a big city at some point in their lives. Pick a big city. I was a little older, but if you're younger, live in a big town like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, just to experience what that's like. And there's nothing like New York every day, and the grit of New York and the excitement of New York. So that was a thrill. Working with Seaver was amazing. He became a dear friend of mine. He's ailing right now. It's a very difficult time in his life with the dementia that he's suffering and some other physical problems. It's very, very sad. But he was sharp as a tack then. And you know what he told me? One of the first things he told me was he wished he had pitched many years in Boston. Really? He loved the short time he had in Boston. He loved it here. He loved to stay here. So we had a great partnership there in New York as well. They offered me that job when it was done. I decided not to take it. It's also true of the Cubs. I was offered the job in Chicago as well to do the Cubs. Turned that down. And you know what it's like. You look back over the arc of your career and you're like, well, this is why I wound up where I wound up.
You don't know it at the time, but it all pushes you where you're supposed to be. And I guess that's kind of my next question for you. You mentioned your lineage, that you're a native New Englander, although I've never heard an accent from you, which I think is remarkable. We'll come back to that in a sec. But it is funny how, you know, the butterfly flaps its wings and everything happens off of that. You know, if you had taken that job in Chicago, you know, what would your life have looked like and all of that? Would you have ever made it back here?
I very nearly left the Red Sox just a few years ago, like 5 or 6 years ago, to go to Los Angeles. We were in very serious contract talks with the Dodgers at the time that Vin Scully was beginning to talk about retirement. And so I look at it this way. I've actually I've arrived at the place that I've arrived, which is home for me, by turning down jobs in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles over the course of time, and I'm so happy that I wound up where I did.
And you know, to be able to raise a family at least a little bit, I know, you know, your kids kind of bounced with you for a little while.
I don't know if you raise a family a little bit. That's a fascinating. I mean, I don't know how one does that. I know we did the three all the way.
Right,
we
right.
just got them through college, so we're having a parade at our house up in Rye, New Hampshire.
Very well, yeah. If you can raise 80% of a kid, that's probably not enough. Right. But to call New England home, not just for you, but I think I'm guessing that your kids kind of regard this area now as home base, right? And I don't know if your kids developed accents in any way, but I am fascinated by that. You've got such a I can't say it's a generic sound because it's a very unique sound. You sound like Dave O'Brien, but in terms of an actual lack of accent, or just, there's no affectation. You wouldn't listen to Dave O'Brien and say, well, that guy obviously is from Mashfield, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, which is how I used to say it, and I still every once in a while fall into. When my brother comes up for Christmas and spends a couple of days around me, I'm calling him Mac, you know, in about 5 minutes. But I hear it. I hear the regionalization in my own head.
Okay.
And oftentimes will slip into what I think is it very much sounds like, you know, I'm a Boston kid.
Well, if you've had a four-hour game with Remy, how does that not by osmosis get into your vocal situation?
I think there's some truth to that. I was born in the same hospital here in Boston that Ted Kennedy was born in. And lived in Quincy until I was like 3 years old and on the South Shore for many, many. I've lived here most of my adult life. And what I did when I went to Syracuse, I let them know that I intended to do national sports, that I intended to do basketball, football, baseball on a national level, and wasn't really thinking so much about the regional stuff. You never really do. You just think, well, I'll be lucky enough to get a job anywhere. And then if A and B equals C, that's where I'm going to wind up going. But I went there with the idea of knocking out some of that regionalization and really worked hard at kind of, you know, carving down that so that, you know, I remember a professor at Syracuse telling me, David, when you learn to pronounce the letter R, you'll be doing a lot better. And I remember, wow, that was a shot right to the solar plexus.
Yeah,
but
right.
But it was something I started to work on right away. And I think I was successful in doing that. But I don't think it ever leaves you. I think there are times it'll always come out. And it comes out for the better. I mean, Jerry's played here. He worked his entire career on the air here. He's never gone anywhere else where somebody said, you know, Jerry, we're in Kansas City. You don't sound like you're from here. This isn't going to work for you. A lot of analysts never have to go through that, but play-by-play guys do.
Is there part of it, though? I mean, I always try to live my life just, you know, off the air, not on, but on the air a little bit, too, by the Shakespearean dictum of to thine own self be true, right? And so, you know, is there something to be said for, in Remy's case, for example, I mean, if that's who you are, if that's who you sound like, you don't have to go to finishing school to try to sound like a cookie-cutter guy. Just be you.
Well, I think the difference is with broadcasters. You know, analysts are former players, and they don't fall under the same edict that the rest of us do. I think when you're talking about calling games on a national level, I think you don't want to sound too much like you're from one end of the country if you can shave that off a little bit. You're always going to have part of that as part of your heart and soul. And, you know, for example, in my case, I grew up coming to this ballpark, and I'm steeped in the Red Sox, and I think that matters here. I think it matters a great deal that I saw Fred Lynn crash into the center field wall. I can tell you why they put padding in the center field wall. It was because they were going to kill Freddie Lynn if they hadn't done that. I mean, that kind of touchstone that, you know, you have guys like me and Joe Castiglione and some others, I think it makes a difference to New Englanders. I think maybe not so much if you're calling the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Or if you're calling, you know, the Anaheim club in L.A.
Well, but in L.A., and I mean, everybody almost is from somewhere else. That's not the case in New England. I mean, a lot of people are born and raised, and they'll die here.
Yeah, I think that's generally true. So, I like you say, to each his own. I think at the end of the day, what you do in this job behind the microphone has less to do with how you sound than what you say and how you say it. In terms of describing the action and telling the story of the season. I think if you're a good narrator, that's where New England fans, sports fans, and Red Sox fans appreciate you.
Last one for the great and Natalie attired Dave O'Brien. Since you mentioned Joe Castiglione, and we both got a mutual fondness for the man you call JoJo, and I don't know him well enough to do that yet, I think of JoJo White, and that's just it's a little off at that point. But you're, and you mentioned this a little bit. You're a history buff. I like history, but I'm not a buff. I can't pretend I'm a buff. You and Castig are buffs. So, having been in London, because by the time this airs, you'll have been in London. You and Joe and I'm probably going to join you on a couple of these things. What do you think you'll have done in London? What are the things you were hoping to check off your list, and I hope you did?
Yeah, well, the first thing I know Joe and I are going to do, and his wife Jan, his lovely wife Jan, is going to join us on the trip. We're going to go over to the war room that Winston Churchill ran the war for England from, and the day the war ended, they put plexiglass all around it. They sealed up those rooms, and no one went in there for like 40 or 50 years, and now they've opened it up. And it's exactly as it was. So that's what I hope by the time this airs, I will have had, Joe will have had the thrill of doing that together. You know, we've done a lot of things, Joe and I, on the road in the years that I did radio. We used to go see the Truman House and the Truman Museum in Independence, Missouri, virtually every year because we're huge Truman fans. We love that period and his presidency and all that. And there's been a lot of things that we've been able to do over the years, but that's something on the list. And you know, I've read a little bit more about, you know, who's buried in Westminster Abbey, and which is phenomenal, the history there. I've been there before, but I've walked over those graves and didn't even realize who I was trudging over. So, you know, you want to do that. I'm going to go visit Dickens' home, one of Charles Dickens' homes in downtown London as well, where he wrote Oliver Twist and a number of his other great works. So, you know, there's so much to do there, and trying to cram it in is probably a disservice, but I'll do the best I can.
I'm just hoping to see the life-size Austin Powers at the Wax Museum. That's my big London check it off the box.
A little bit of a different bent for you, I understand.
You go that way, I go that way. So anyway, Dave, thank you very much. Continued success to you and to your wonderful partners, and so thrilled that you and I have gotten a chance to work together. I don't mean to eulogize either of us. We're obviously going to reconvene soon, but thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Great to have you on the broadcast, Josh, and in Boston, and let's get this thing going.
Please.
Thanks.
I kept you a little very cool of OB to spend some time with us. And thank you guys for hanging in this week. I know it's been an unconventional week of Sox Daily, but hopefully you enjoyed this getting to know you session or sesh. as the idiot people say. I try never to say that or shorten words in general. But we're going to come back and have more podcasts for you after the All-Star break. It'll get going as soon as that Red Sox-Dodgers series completes and get you going again. And hopefully you'll come on back and find us and continue to tell your friends that this thing exists. Josh Lewin, wishing you a very safe and happy All-Star portion of your calendar year. And again, thanks for your patronage here for Sox Daily.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.